I think a lot more people are drinking now than using drugs.
I'm 14 and I've had a problem with alcohol since I was about 9.
I'm 19. I started drinking when I was about 12 or 13.
I've been drinking for about 6 years and I've found it was a problem about a year ago.
Well, I started drinking when I was 9 years old.
I think the parents are definitely relieved to hear their kids say they're drinking rather than smoking pot. Well, I think alcohol is a lot easier to come by, and it's not as frightening, maybe. It's not as risky as drugs, because if somebody gets arrested for driving in a car with alcohol in the car, it's not really that big of a shock, maybe, to their parents as if they were to get busted for drugs. You know, alcohol is pretty well accepted by this society. Well, it is accepted. And drugs aren't accepted at all. And so I think maybe a lot of the reason that they do more drinking is it's just because it's legal.
They say that drugs were the 60s thing. Well, if they were, then alcohol is the thing of the 1970s for young people today. But it's scarcely a consolation to realize that millions of young Americans all the way from 11, 12, and 13 have got serious alcohol problems. That's right. We've come a long way from the days of the beer parties back in the 30s and 40s when after graduation from high school, the kids would maybe knock the top of the neck off the bottle of beer and try not to get glass in their mouth or their throat while they showed off before the girls. The beer parties, the goldfish swallowing, seeing how many kids could get in the rumble seat of a Model A or a telephone booth. That was just kid stuff. Well, today it's right down to serious problems. Youngsters who are drinking because they're trying to escape the unbelievable pressures of today. Alcohol has reinvaded the schools. One reason is that parents are far less concerned. Simply because they realize, as you heard the young girl say, that if the kid is busted for driving along in the automobile and there is an open can of beer or a bottle in the car, the police and the parents alike are far more prone to take a lenient view of that than they are somebody with a packet of heroin and a bindle to apply the needle of the arm. And so if you're high on booze, it's not quite such a crime as it would be considered to be sniffing glue or maybe Bennies or Reds or some of the real hard stuff like heroin. Besides, as the young fellow said, drugs were the 60s stuff. Well, mixed drinks in blenders and dormitories are an in thing these days, and of course vodka and tequila, because of the colorless nature, are pretty easy to conceal, and they tend to take the place of some of the beer and the other things the kids are using. So it really shouldn't be surprising that to drink or not to drink is not even a question anymore. Now, kids know that drinking is the okay thing. The drinking age has been lowered down within reach of additional millions of them. And they know that it's okay all the way from bums to businessmen. It's the okay way to loosen up and kind of get yourself all oiled for the party that's coming up. It's the okay way to drown your sorrows. As a matter of fact, they're calling it the okay addiction.
Drinking is becoming a lot more prominent than drugs now. Drugs are kind of going out, kind of past from the late 60s, I'd say, was mainly when drugs were a big thing. But I think they're fading out more now. They're still there, but people do a lot more drinking, I think, than using drugs now, in high school anyway.
Why do you drink?
To get high and loaded.
Just really pleasure. When I got a problem, I drink.
Get in with the in crowd.
If I'm at a party or something and everyone else is drinking.
The main object, I think, of most of the parties is to get drunk. That's what most everybody's doing, or most everybody's trying to do, and they don't generally drink just because they enjoy it. Or I'm sure they enjoy it, but they don't drink social drinking, like I guess at adult cocktail parties, you know, the main object of the drinking is to get drunk.
People come to a bar for several reasons. Some people come into a bar to drink, some people come into a bar to look. They classified as the drinkers and the lookers. Some people just come in to get drunk.
Bars, that's the only place you can really meet groovy ladies, you know? They enjoy it, man. They can really hold this liquor.
Well, you'll find that the people that have domestic arguments will tend to come into a bar more often than other people. A lot of people come into a bar to forget their troubles.
Do it again.
Is that a lot, Tim?
Yeah, well, I got a lot of problems.
Officer Casey, you work one of the busiest highway systems in the world, the Los Angeles freeway system.
Mm-hmm.
And as an enforcer of traffic laws, what kind of driver is the biggest problem driver on the road today?
The drinking driver, because of the economic loss, the death rate, the number of injuries inflicted, is just tremendous. Therefore, I would have to say that's our most problem driver right now, the drinking driver.
What are my chances if I'm out driving, let's say, after 11 o'clock at night, what are my chances of encountering a drunk driver on the road?
Just about every third car probably has a person in it who's had enough to drink to be legally considered under the influence of alcohol in California. See, people being out, the clubs, the parties, the holiday season, summer, not only drinking during the day, but in the evening, you know, coming home, having a drink, going someplace, going out to have a drink. And especially the weekend. The weekend, I'd say it's almost an absolute that you'd be guaranteed one out of three. And during the week, it's pretty much a certainty.
At one point in every alcoholic's life, you find out you no longer just want it, you need it.
There is no such thing as moderation, you know? We don't know anything about one drink and stop. The disease of alcoholism, the nature of it is such that one drink leads to another. It's an old hacksaw that, you know, one drink is too many and a thousand's not enough.
I was never really a daily drinker. I'd drink maybe 4 days out of a week. But it was too much because every time I took a drink, it was for the sole purpose of getting drunk. There was no... I just didn't believe in social drinking. A can of beer or a cocktail or something like that. It seemed totally ridiculous, you know, that you're drunk and drink.
Everything else becomes secondary. Alcohol becomes primary in your life. The supply you have, when you can get it. Do you have enough at home? Will the liquor stores be closed tomorrow? You know, I better be careful and put some aside. Your whole world becomes narrowed into the bottle.
When you become finally addicted to alcohol, it's just, it becomes a whole new ballgame. You just lose control completely. It's no longer your choice to stop or start. You can't. Your body craves the junk.
Well, I think that drinking, in some instances, is good for some people and not good for other people. Take bartenders, for instance. Most bartenders don't drink, mainly because of the fact that they've been behind the bar for so many years. They've seen what the alcohol does to the people on the other side, and they don't want to see themselves in that state.
As an annual business, it amounts to about $25 billion a year. That's right. That's for alcohol alone. That has nothing to do with joblessness or health or all the related costs. Unfortunately, it costs society a lot more than the total price tag on the booze itself, the bottles, the caps, and the cans. It's another $25 billion tab, for instance, to pay for all of the alcohol-related social costs, such as absenteeism and health and accidents and all of that problem. That's a bill of 10 to 15 billions inflicted on industry and business by the alcohol problems of employees. And you've heard about the Monday morning automobile, haven't you? That's right, the Monday morning automobile. In that industry alone, because of the boredom and the pressures on assembly line production, there are so many automobile workers who hit it so hard on the weekend that by Monday morning they're coming along on the job and they just can't quite keep up with the way they should. So by Tuesday you're getting a fairly good car, but if they make it on Monday, they say there are a lot more easily discernible factory defects than on the Tuesday or the Wednesday automobile. So really, it's virtually impossible to put a price tag on the greatest cost of alcoholism. The heavy drinker, health-wise, is susceptible to infectious diseases more so than the non-drinker, to gastritis, ulcers, and pancreatitis, to killers such as heart disease and cirrhosis of the liver, and some of the most recent studies, too, are linking even diseases such as cancer of the mouth, of the larynx, the esophagus, and cancer of the liver to excessive drinking. Crime and crime statistics give some indication of the emotional and the mental suffering that alcohol abuse causes. Family savings poured out of a bank account into a bottle and into the drinker's mouth is one problem. And the children of alcoholics who have been brought up by one parent or another because both weren't really doing much of a job, who have seen the knockdown, drag-out fights, and often as not even murder. That, of course, is a common problem. It's a common observation, too, that the families of alcoholics are just as disturbed as the alcoholic himself is. And this has given rise to such organizations as Al-Anon and Al-Ateen, a takeoff, in a sense, for youngsters, named or patterned after Alcoholics Anonymous, designed not to help the alcoholic himself, but to help the family and the children of the alcoholic. Problem drinkers are likely these days to end up drying out in jail or even the penitentiary. And don't be surprised if you find that people are using burglary or robbery to feed an alcohol habit, just not unlike drug addicts do, because ethyl alcohol is a drug. And there are surely more addicts of alcohol than all other forms of drugs combined. Of the 5.5 million arrests made every year in the United States, almost half are related to the abuse of alcohol. It's a factor in half of all homicides and a quarter of all suicides. But there's the good side of it, too. Because believe it or not, alcoholic beverages have carried religious, political, social, cultural, all kinds of significances down through history to our time today, where alcohol is the accepted and even sometimes expected way to loosen up even a business meeting, and certainly is used very ostensibly in diplomatic relations. Alcohol has always been a part of medicine, and still is. Today, physicians may still prescribe alcoholic beverages as mild relaxants for geriatric patients or stimulants for lagging appetites, and believe it or not, even the Bible says to drink a little wine for your stomach's sake and your oft infirmities. Today, in the United States, roughly two-thirds of the adult population drink, about 100 million people. Most of these are social drinkers, but of our nearly 100 million drinkers, about a tenth, that's 9 to 10 million, are alcoholic abusers or alcoholics. There's a difference, then, between just drinking and drinking seriously, like you're trying to really empty the shelves on the store there, or you're trying to do away with all the beer in the state of Washington. And these are the problem cases, the people who blindly smash into each other on the highways, who run down helpless bystanders or passersby, the people who commit murder, jump off bridges, or in a violent homicide fight of some kind, end up killing their mate and then themselves. So despite all of the problems, pro and con, the fact that alcohol, on the one hand, is a natural substance and a food, and that taken in extreme moderation can be beneficial, the fact that beyond that moderate amount it can be harmful, and all of the statistics about the problem in the United States as a whole and the entirety of society and what it is doing to us, alcohol is here to stay. Those of you old enough to remember, recall that we tried living without booze back in the days of Prohibition.
It's truly a habit-forming poison as morphine or cocaine. It lowers the defensive power of the white blood corpuscles. It decreases the oxygen-absorbing and oxygen-carrying power of the red blood corpuscles. It inflames the stomach. It hardens the arteries. It weakens the heart. It softens the brain. It clogs the liver. It rots the kidneys. And if you drink enough of it, it will give you a green brain and a red nose and a white liver and a black heart and put a yellow streak clear through you.
To drink or not to drink. This dilemma tore America apart for many decades, until in 1919 the nation voted the 18th Amendment to the Constitution into law, prohibiting manufacture and sale of alcoholic beverages in the United States. For 13 years, not to drink was the law of the land. In 1932, the Democratic Party's candidate for president proclaimed,
"We advocate the repeal of the 18th Amendment."
Now President Roosevelt in the cabinet room, the White House, is about to sign the long-awaited beer bill. The president signs the bill.
So we found the dry life was not for us after all. And in fact, paradoxically, the era of Prohibition, rather than putting an end to the so-called sin of drinking, made it fantastically popular. It became very fashionable for ladies to go to speakeasies. Cocktail parties became a symbol of social status. Some of the ladies at speakeasies drank the hard stuff openly for the first time in history, daring to act like Carrie Nation might have said a prostitute would have earlier. And by the way, that was Carrie Nation in person, both in voice, and you saw her there. Today, each year in America, we consume per person about 27 gallons of beer, almost 2 gallons of wine, and over 2.5 gallons of hard liquor. Now, that's the entire population of the United States of America. But one-third of the adult population never touches the stuff. So if you consider only the people who drink, you look at the average, you find the average consumption is nearly 4 gallons of pure ethyl alcohol per drinking person per year. That's equal to 44-fifths of whiskey, 98 bottles of sherry, or 157 bottles of table wine, or 928 cans of beer. Maybe you're thinking, I drink, but I certainly don't drink that much. Well, that's probably because if you're right about that, and you may not be because you may never have counted the cans, somebody, somewhere, is drinking more than his share.
Plain truth. Plain truth. Plain truth. The International Publication of Understanding. Information you need in today's changing society. Reports on meetings with national leaders. Correspondents in all quarters of the globe report on current trends. Plain Truth. The journal you should read. Garner Ted Armstrong's analysis of important national and global issues. Read Plain Truth every 2 weeks at no cost to you. For your free subscription, call 800-423-4444. 800-423-4444. Toll free. That's 800-423-4444. Plain truth.
I drink over 10 fifths a day. And my daggone reputation is known on this street for almost 30 years.
I have no idea how much I drink in a day. I just drink and drink and drink and drink. And that's 24 hours a day. It's not just 2-3 hours. I mean, I drink.
I've got a headache, and another drink is going to kill me. But if I get off of it 2 weeks, I'm all right. But if I keep drinking, I'm going to keep fouling up.
I have a beautiful woman, and I have five children. But that's no excuse for me. They left me.
If a guy buys a jug, we all drink a jug. I develop a total disregard for other people's property when I'm drinking.
You're not a wino. You're an alcoholic.
And, of course, my concept of what an alcoholic was a skid row bum, and I didn't fit that. And I began to think in terms of the fact that, that life had dealt me a dirty deal, and that's why I drank.
The reason I drank was because the stress and strain of life was too much for me to handle.
I knew what alcohol would do for me and to me all along, and that's the reason I drank. I became oblivious to everything. I just never faced anything.
We are people who are truly diseased with life, and we turn to alcohol to make us feel better. And I would have rather died than tell you that I had a drinking problem or that I was unable to meet life's daily problems. I would have, fought you all day long on that issue. Well, I get up and go to work every day, I earn a good salary. I keep a nice home. I manage my life. But I needed alcohol to do it, and that bothered me.
You learn how to handle a drunk. You got to handle them very carefully, because some guys that come in and drink, they sometimes, I think they have a psychological problem. They're trying to drink themselves to some state of mind, what I don't know.
You make people think you're something that you ain't because you really hate what you think you are.
The disease that that accompanies the use of alcohol is an emotional discomfort, inability to live and to cope with life without the need for alcohol or some type of escape. You know, we might call that the whole drug scene because they're one and the same thing. But alcohol is the number one drug problem in this country, and we ought to be talking about the number one drug problem, because it is used by most people as, you know, a daily tranquilizer to get along or to socially lubricate oneself. When you work with people who are in trouble with alcohol, you find many likenesses in their emotional levels. Inability to handle life's problems on a daily basis. Doesn't mean they're good or bad, black or white, you know. It simply means that they have not learned how at an emotional level, and they turn to alcohol. Recovery is teaching a person how to cope with living.
If there ever was a world to be diseased over, this is it. Every time you pick up your morning newspaper or hear a telecast about news and what's happening, it just about makes you sick. And you look at the pressures on people, on the job, in the home, in the school, wherever you are. We're so uptight and worried about inflation, about the potential for a Great Depression. People are really nervous and frightened about investment of money. They're worried about buying or paying for a home. They're worried about the high cost of everything, people's lives privately, so far as their love life, their marriages, and their homes are falling apart. If there was ever a world to be a little bit worried about and diseased over, it's this one. Not just the big problems of pollution or the energy crisis or crime and the rather impersonal ones where you see the charts and the statistics, but the day-to-day coping with the pressures on you as a human being. You probably drink. And you probably do so rather continuously and fairly seriously. Some people go down and deliberately sit at the bar and say, hit me with a double, hit me with another, hit me with another, and then plainly say, look, I've got a hang up, I've got a problem, I'm going to get rid of it. You know, we may come to the day where we see some of the liquor companies be like the other advertisers on television that show you all these plungers in your head and all these pressures, you see, these valves and things in there and in your stomach, and they say, you got a headache? Take our product. I never yet have seen people like Seagram's or Four Roses or Canadian Club advertising, got a headache? Belt booze. But maybe we're coming to that, because people are certainly doing it by the millions. So there are the worries over career choices, over education, over school and poor grades. There are the problems of simply what to do in the long, hot summer, and so people have resolved the difficulty. They drink. And millions upon millions are becoming alcoholics. A study in the case histories of hundreds of alcoholics find that most pass through identical progressive stages in their drinking careers. Just like the psychological dependency from pot to heroin, people can deny it, but it is there. They begin with occasional social drinking, it becomes occasional escape drinking, and finally it becomes frequent escape drinking, and finally it becomes alcoholism. So, in most respects, alcoholics represent a cross-section of all society. Man and woman, rich and poor, black and white, young and old, educated and uneducated. But among the few things that alcoholics have in common are the psychological traits of a low tolerance for tension and frustration, inability to cope with psychological stresses, feelings of isolation and alienation, especially among the elderly, perfectionism, a desire to do better and therefore to lean upon a crutch, and of course, low self-esteem. And all human beings have a certain amount of basic inferiority. So the problems are easily solved by a few drinks, at least temporarily. It can start very innocently. You can take a look at some other nations, and maybe they just don't have the cultural hang-ups that we do in the United States. For example, do you know that in Italy, where the per capita consumption of alcohol is greater than the United States, and the same comment for France, where table wine is commonly there from the time a little kid is sitting around the table with dad and mom and drinking it just like we might drink water or milk, that they have a lower alcoholism rate than we do because we in our country have had our social taboos. We have tended to make it the forbidden fruit, so to speak, and so the young kids go out and do it on the sly. There is a problem there that we ought to face. Alcohol addiction is unlike other drug addictions in some ways, the most significant being that it takes generally from 3 to 15 years to become physically addicted to alcohol. But you can become psychologically addicted to it before you ever even start it. You can want a crutch, you can reach out for one, and you can find yourself in serious physical, emotional, mental, and economic trouble. So although alcoholism can be considered, and rightly so, a disease, the greatest part of its treatment must be the psychological or the emotional cure, and that can only be effective if the alcoholic really desires to quit and find some other way of coping with his problems in life.
Oh, there's enormous help if we can just get people to come forward for it. An office like mine, which is an affiliate of the National Council on Alcoholism, is duplicated in most major metropolitan areas in this entire country. And we also have an additional, some 80 or 100 associate offices that handle less populated areas. Simply look in your phone book under A. They're usually listed as Alcoholism Information, Guidance, and Referral Centers. Take alcohol out of an alcoholic's life, you darn well better have something to replace it that does as good a job at relieving his dis-ease. For most people, that has been a new way of life, spiritually based.
No matter what you try to do or who tries to help you, you've got to come to that decision that you just can't drink. I hurt a lot of people along the way, and I hurt myself, and I'm tired of suffering. Pain, loneliness, and everything else. And with God's help, I can do it one day at a time.
One day at a time with God's help. Jesus Christ said, "When the Son of Man come," and he promises he surely will, "shall he find faith on the earth?" No, he's going to find the way we're going, millions upon millions of people who are stiffening their spines and bolstering their ego with booze. You can stop. You can quit it. You can solve your problems on the job, in the home, and your own physiological and psychological problems if you'll just take the step. You've seen what to do. Why don't you pick up the phone and call someone and ask for help? But before you do that, why don't you go right now and get down on your knees and say, "God, help me."
All literature offered on the Garner Ted Armstrong program is free upon request. Write Garner Ted Armstrong, Pasadena, California, 91123. Canadian viewers write Box 44, Vancouver, BC. In the continental United States, you may call this toll-free number, 800-423-4444. That's 800-423-4444. In California, call 213-577-5225. Be sure to watch Garner Ted Armstrong again next week at this same time.